The headlines: the World Bank says more than half of Gaza's population is on the brink of famine as Israel's genocidal war enters its 167th day. The World Health Organization says Israel has carried out over 400 attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector during its genocide war, killing nearly 690 people. And the Palestine Football Association calls on FIFA to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the regime's genocide in Gaza. Our top story for this half hour: more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip, the regime's strikes keep claiming more civilian lives across the territory. The latest Israeli airstrikes killed a dozen civilians, including at least two children, in northern and southern Gaza. Palestinian sources said another air raid on a house east of Rafah City killed at least six civilians. An Israeli strike targeted a house west of Gaza City, killing a mother and her son. Israeli military drones also targeted a group of civilians east of Jabalia in northern Gaza, killing three civilians and wounding 10 others. The Israeli genocide has so far killed nearly 32,000 civilians, leaving over 74,000 injured, 7,000 more are unaccounted for and feared to be dead under the rubble. The World Bank says more than half of Gaza's population, including children and the elderly, are on the brink of famine, calling for an urgent action to save lives. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is profoundly distressing. Continuous Israeli bombings and on civilian areas have left people without shelter. Let's take a listen to harrowing accounts of some of those displaced.
There is U.S. support, European support, and support of the whole world with Israel. They support them with weapons and planes. They mock us and send four or five airdrops just to save their faces.
We were sleeping a while before pre-dawn meal. However, they bombarded the place. We are displaced persons from the north. We are not affiliated with any political party. No safe place is being left across Gaza.
I am saying this to the whole world. They can see what Israel is doing to the poor Palestinian people. We have been under bombings for 6 months. They are children. What have they done to deserve this? We are tired. We no longer have energy. The children in the south and the north are dying of hunger. What has a baby done to die of hunger?
Sheet metal panels, rubble, and the stones have fallen on my husband. God protected my daughter. I pulled her out from the bathroom. The metal panels and rubble from the adjacent building collapsed on us. Thanks God we survived.
Well, the World Health Organization says it has documented 410 Israeli attacks on Gaza's healthcare sector since the regime launched its genocidal war in early October. According to the WHO, such attacks left over 680 people dead and hundreds more injured until March the 12th. It said that the Israeli strikes damaged or destroyed nearly 100 healthcare facilities and about a similar number of ambulances across Gaza. It added that two-fifths of Israeli attacks took place in Gaza City, a quarter of them in North Gaza, and another quarter in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The World Health Organization emphasized that the healthcare sector should not be a target in armed conflicts. It urged the Israeli regime to respect international law. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released footage showing its fighters repelling an Israeli attack near Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. The video released on Wednesday shows resistance fighters targeting invading troops and a tank with rockets and hand grenades. Israeli forces attacked the hospital over the weekend, killing and injuring a number of people. Palestinian media reported that the regime's military also blew up a building used as critical care unit at the hospital. Hamas has time and again rejected allegations that its members use hospitals and command centers, a pretext Israel cites, for its attacks on medical complexes. They've stormed Al-Shifa several times. Neither resistance fighters nor Israeli captives have been found in any of those hospitals. Meanwhile, the regime's forces have maintained their siege on Al-Shifa, one of the few partially functioning hospitals in northern Gaza. The Palestine Football Association has called on football's international governing body, FIFA, to impose sanctions against Israeli teams over the regime's genocide in Gaza. The Palestinian Association said six other member nations have endorsed its proposal, asking FIFA to put it on the agenda of its upcoming Congress in May. It added that the regime's onslaught has killed nearly 100 football players and destroyed or seriously damaged the entire football infrastructure in Gaza in clear violation of international law. Palestinian officials said at least five football clubs based in Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank are members of the regime's football association. They said such inclusion implicitly recognizes Israel's sovereignty over the settlements, which goes against international law and FIFA's obligations. The Israeli regime has conducted fresh raids on different areas across the West Bank. Four Palestinians are killed in Tul Karam and another killed in Ramallah during the incursions. Let's cross over to Ramallah to have more details from our correspondent, Mona Kandil, who's with us now from Ramallah. Mona, over to you.
Last night was yet another bloody night here in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli forces killed two more Palestinians in Nur Shams refugee camp during military raid, and taking death toll in Nur Shams refugee camp in Tul Karam to four, where the Israeli military had already conducted an airstrike at a group of Palestinians, and they killed two Palestinians there. The Israeli military claimed they were preparing to carry out anti-Israeli operations inside the lands occupied in 1948. Later, the Israeli forces raided Nur Shams refugee camp. Exchange of fire continued for several hours, and only in less than half an hour, the Israeli forces left Tul Karim refugee camp after killing two more Palestinians. You have to mention that in addition to those four Palestinians who were killed in Nur Shams refugee camp, the Israeli military had already had also conducted another airstrike earlier in Jenin refugee camp and killed three Palestinians. Those three Palestinians, according to the Israeli military, they were inside a vehicle and the airstrike hit the vehicle. The Israeli military claimed that among those Palestinians who were killed were Ahmed Barakat. He was a member or a commander of the Jenin Brigade, and he was responsible for an operation carried out last May in the settlement of Harmish that led to the killing of an Israeli settler. In addition to Ahmed Barakat, there were two more of his friends, as the Israeli military claimed, and they were senior members of the resistance and the armed wing of the resistance group of the Jihad movement in Jenin Brigade. Later, the Israeli military stormed the Satah Marhaba area and Kufr Aqab, south Ramallah, during the military raid that aimed in the first place to arrest more Palestinians. Israeli forces opened fire at the Palestinians, killing another Palestinian, this time in Satah Marhaba area, south Ramallah, and wounded two others there. The Israelis now are claiming, according to the Israeli army radio, they are claiming that a Palestinian arrived at the Gosh Atzion military checkpoint south Beit Lahem, and that he tried to stab Israeli soldiers at the military checkpoint. The Israeli forces opened fire at this Palestinian man and killed him. So it seems that we are speaking about nine Palestinians were killed in the last 24 hours in northern the occupied West Bank, in the center of the occupied West Bank, and in southern the occupied West Bank. This brings the number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, to 446 Palestinians.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Kandil joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Moving on, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has announced a new operation against an Israeli target in solidarity with the Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. The Iraqi resistance said its latest operation targeted a power plant in Tel Aviv in the occupied Palestinian territories using drones. A group said anti-Israeli operations will continue in support of Palestinians in Gaza. and in response to the Israeli massacres of innocent civilians. The new attack came just a day after Iraq's Islamic resistance hit Israel's Ben-Gurion airport with drones for the second time. The Iraqi resistance has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli targets in the occupied territories in recent months. It has also attacked U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's role in the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Yemen's foreign ministry has censured the UN Security Council for issuing a statement against the country's naval operations in the Red Sea. The 15-member council discussed the Red Sea this week, despite repeated declarations by the Yemeni army that its operation is mainly on Israel or Israeli-linked ships in a show of solidarity with Palestinians and against the regime's bloodshed in Gaza. Abdul Latif Anwashali has filed this report from Sana'a.
Yemen's foreign ministry has reacted strongly to a statement recently issued by the UN Security Council deploring attacks on vessels linked to Israel, as well as American and British assets in the Red Sea, and demanded the authorities in Sana'a to immediately halt such assaults. The ministry lambasted the 15-member council, saying Yemen's naval actions are only aimed at supporting Palestinians. It said the UNSC move reflects the body's submission to America's interests and its support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza.
The Security Council usually stands by American, British, and Zionist policies and implements their agenda, but at the same time fails to stop the Israeli massacres of the people of Palestine. Therefore, the Republic of Yemen considers any statements from the Security Council non-existent. Sana'a continues its efforts to support Palestinians in accordance with the will of the people in Yemen. The armed forces are also targeting American, British, and Israeli ships as Yemen stands alongside the Axis of Resistance in the fight against the Axis of Evil, and we will prevail, God willing.
Officials highlighted that Yemen's operations in the Red and Arabian Seas are motivated by the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza and enjoy support not only from Yemenis but also from the freedom-seeking people worldwide.
The Security Council's statement is futile and is part of American policy, meaning that a council tries to appease the United States and Britain at the expense of the blood of innocent Palestinians. We support Palestinians not only from the humanitarian angle, but there is a brotherly bond between Yemenis and the people of Palestine. Our actions are in retaliation for the ongoing Israeli genocide.
Meanwhile, the army spokesperson announced an assault on yet another American vessel, Mado, in the Red Sea, using multiple missiles. It also reported attacks on Israeli targets in the occupied territories, including the one near Eilat port that has also been confirmed by the Israeli military. The Yemeni army launched its anti-Israel operations in mid-November. It has, though, repeatedly announced that all other ships are free and safe to sail through the strategic waterway. However, recently they have also targeted American and British ships and retaliation for the two countries' aggression against Yemen.
People here say that during U.S.-backed years-long war on Yemen, the UN Security Council turned a blind eye to the war crimes committed against Yemenis. Therefore, they argue that the military action is the only way to deter the aggressors, as Western hegemonic countries only understand the language of force, not dialogue. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the enemies have long attempted to cause the collapse of the country's economy, but to no avail. Ayatollah Khamenei added that Iran has witnessed outstanding improvements in various domains in the past year, despite efforts by the enemies to instill hopelessness among the people. He made the remarks on the occasion of the Persian New Year. The leader elaborated on this year's slogan, that is, surge in production through people's participation. He underlined that the growth in production will be possible only with the participation of all people. Ayatollah Khamenei further highlighted the great capacities Iran enjoys, noting that such potential, if properly used, will ensure further economic success. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader touched on Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, calling it the most pressing issue before the world. The leader added that the bloodshed unfolding in Gaza exposes the true face of the so-called advanced Western civilization. He said the West has not only been standing idly by in the face of the massacre of Palestinians, but it has also been supporting Israel financially and militarily. Ayatollah Khamenei also praised the resistance front, saying the events happening in West Asia have revealed the capacity and power of the resistance against Zionism. He added the regional resistance groups have thwarted the plots of the Israeli regime and its Western backers, especially the U.S. European Council President Charles Michel has called on the European Union to prepare for war and enhance its military capabilities amid escalating tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. Max Healy reports from Rome.
The recent European Council President Charles Michel's warning that the European Union needs to ramp up its military production and shift to a war economy mode in response to an alleged threat posed by Russia has sparked international alarm and mixed reactions in Europe. Earlier this week, Michel wrote in an opinion editorial run by a media specialized in EU affairs that if Europe wants peace, it must prepare for war, arguing that although the EU's military manufacturing capacity has increased by 50% since the start of the Ukraine-Russia war in 2022, far more was needed.
Our European awakening is just beginning to take shape, and I would like to tell you what I feel. The time has come to create a real union of defence coupled with a true defence single market.
Michel added that the European Union must finally take responsibility for its own security.
For decades, the European Union has relied heavily on the United States and the Western military alliance, NATO, for its security. Analysts believe that the dependency on external powers by the 27-member bloc has resulted in a complete loss of its own geopolitical and strategic autonomy.
In questo momento,
at this point in time, the EU cannot be militarily independent. It can't adopt autonomous strategies. Today, Europe must create its own defense system so that in 30 years' time, it can really be geopolitically autonomous. If we continue to put national interests ahead, all individual states, including Italy, would lose geopolitical relevance.
Michel's remarks come as Ukrainian and international politicians and experts are warning that ammunition shortages are resulting in the losses of territory to Russia.
Michel is trying to keep Germany under pressure, demanding together with the French government that Berlin provide Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles Taurus. German Chancellor Scholz has so far said no to this request to avoid a war escalation, adding that his country has already provided Kiev with arms for 7 billion euros, while France is struggling to pay for Ukraine military aid.
On Wednesday, the Italian former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte accused the current Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of dragging Italy into World War III after having turned the country into an irrelevant, subjugated power. Max Civili, Rome.
Well, that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Happy Iranian New Year! Happy Nowruz! Happy Iranian New Year! Happy Nowruz! Happy Iranian New Year! Happy Nowruz! Happy Iranian New Year! Happy Nowruz!
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke recently by video link to an APEC summit taking place just outside Washington, D.C. APEC attendees applauded his pursuit of genocide in Gaza, where tens of thousands of Palestinians have been martyred, neighborhoods wiped out, and the Zionist regime military has overseen starvation policies, now taking the lives of Palestinian children. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Netanyahu has received the staunch support from President Joe Biden. The American president has noted some reservations at times, expressing consternation at the Zionist regime's indiscriminate bombing and over-the-top conduct in Gaza. But so far, Biden has kept the weapons flowing to Israel. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is most unlikely to stop the delivery of weapons now that Yoav Gallant, the Zionist regime's war minister, has signed a letter to the Biden administration with empty assurances that the weapons will be used in accordance with international law and that the U.S. humanitarian aid will be allowed into Gaza. This was, after all, already supposed to be the case. According to the Washington Post, the U.S. has approved and delivered more than 100 separate foreign military sales to Israel since October 7th, including thousands of precision-guided munitions, small-diameter bombs, bunker busters, small arms, and other lethal aid. For re-election purposes, Biden understands to say one thing, while quietly belying the words with actions facilitating the Zionist regime's war crimes. Biden's weekend comment about a red line on an Israeli invasion of Rafah, the last so-called safer area for Palestinians in Gaza, appears meaningless. He immediately self-corrected to note, I'm never gonna leave Israel, the defense of Israel is still critical, unquote. Netanyahu, for his part, wasn't having even a little of it, declaring, we will go there, he added, you know, I have a red line. You know what the red line is? That October 7 doesn't happen again, never happens again, unquote. Red lines about the Zionist regime's apartheid and war crimes, however, are scarcely broached by mainstream Western media. The Zionist regime's prime minister continued with a similar line of thinking at APEC, pocketing Biden's support and indicating he would nevertheless do what he wants with American weapons. He said, I deeply appreciate it, the support we've received from President Biden and the administration, and I hope it will continue. But let me be clear, Israel will win this war no matter what. The key words, though, unbelievable are these. We will finish the job in Rafah while enabling the civilian population to get out of harm's way. We've taken measures to minimize civilian casualties that no other army has taken in history. Yet those supposed measures involve the killing of well over 12,000 Palestinian children. Even if CNN couldn't bring itself to note clearly and repeatedly that the Zionist regime is the power killing them in a recent segment on Palestinian children. Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, also speaking recently, said that the path to securing stability for Israel does not lie in smashing into Rafah, where there are 1.3 million people in the absence of a credible plan to deal with the population there. And again, as things stand today, we have not seen what that plan is. But he refused to speculate on whether the U.S. would condition military aid to Israel if Netanyahu disregards Biden's mealy-mouthed warning and attacks Rafah and the Palestinians seeking limited safety there. In other words, if hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who have faced 5 months of bombing and deprivation are not moved out of Rafah before an Israeli regime offensive, then the Biden administration may or may not take action regarding weapons to Israel. It's all words with no meaningful consequences as of yet, except that key constituencies are abandoning Biden and the Democratic Party. And if Palestinians are moved to the north, where the bombed and destitute are starving, the Biden administration is signaling that would be acceptable in the midst of what the International Court of Justice has deemed a plausible genocide by the child killer regime of Israel. AIPAC lobbyists spend part of their day pushing for additional military aid from the U.S. in order for the Zionist regime to prosecute the Gaza genocide unencumbered by a weapons shortage. Code Pink activists were there to challenge them. At least one irate AIPAC lobbyist ripped up a photo of starving Palestinians. Another argued that the Zionist regime could have turned Gaza into a parking lot had it wanted to do so and was rightly told that it had done so. Congressman Max Miller, in fact, early in the assault on Gaza, called for turning it into a parking lot. An AIPAC lobbyist attempt to get Code Pink activists thrown out for exercising their First Amendment rights in trying to stop a genocide. Code Pink co-founder Media Benjamin told the Electronic Intifada that while they weren't thrown out of the Capitol building, they were forced from the grounds. Benjamin wrote in a message, "There is a vast chasm between what the president says and what he is doing, just like thanks to AIPAC, there is a vast chasm between what the American people want, a ceasefire and no more weapons to Israel, and what Congress is doing." The response to Code Pink activists made clear that genocide promotion in Gaza is going and being pursued by AIPAC lobbyists seeking more U.S. weapons for the Zionist regime's ongoing bombing and decimation of the coastal strip of territory and its people. Yet many Democratic candidates continue to embrace the financial support of AIPAC's Super PAC, United Democracy Project, and are likewise complicit in the Zionist regime's actions in Gaza. Even Politico, apparently beholden, though not yet pledged, to a code of conduct supporting the right of existence of the Zionist regime, even as an apartheid regime that is carrying out genocide in Gaza, has acknowledged that AIPAC is expected to spend $100 million across its political entities in 2024, taking aim at candidates they deem insufficiently supportive of the Zionist regime. In 2024, many Democrats are proudly taking AIPAC's money to undercut candidates who would actually do what Americans want, back a ceasefire.
This Monday. Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in his New Year address, congratulated the Iranian nation on the occasion of Nowruz, renewing emphasis on productivity and the people's participation in enhancing productivity. He noted how the enemy has failed in pursuing a policy to economically defeat the Iranian nation, just like how it will fail when it comes to the issue of Palestine and the genocide war that the U.S. and Israel are pursuing. In this edition of the program, we will break down the speech by Iran's leader and look at some of the different ways that Iran's enemies have failed in trying to break the will of the Islamic Republic. First, let me introduce our guest. Masoud Shajara, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, joins us from Brussels. Also joining us is Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator from London. Welcome to you both. I'd like to start with you, Masoud Shajara, and happy Nowruz, by the way. Let's look at the slogan that Iran's leader has introduced, and that is Year of Surge in Production Through People's Participation. And let me get a reaction from you on that.
First of all, I'd like to wish you a happy new rules. But the fact of the matter is that every beginning of the Islamic Revolution, the West was totally committed to undermine and indeed bring a regime change. And I remember it very, very, very clearly that year by year, month by month, they were saying that the Islamic Revolution is not going to last any more than a month, more than a year. And this went on and on and on. And now the Islamic Revolution is so established that that is unbelievable, despite all the efforts and that has been made, all the sanction, all the sort of political maneuvering, financial restrictions, and on, Iran is going from strength to strength. It's Iran, at the time of the revolution, and indeed just after the revolution, was not able to get enough barbed wire to defend itself against Saddam Hussein and all who were helping Saddam Hussein. Let us not forget it was the West, it was the East, it was the sort of all the neighbors, Arab nations, and so forth and so on. Despite all that, Iran has survived and has gone from strength to strength. Now Iran is actually a military power. Iran has shown that sanctions is not going to affect it. It will, and it has put pressure, but Iran is going from strength to strength. And the speech of Ayatollah Khamenei today was actually highlighting that and actually saying that we need to build upon that. And the way that needs to be done, the way to do it, is through the empowerment of people. It needs to come by the people, for the people, and there's no other way for it. And we need to mobilize the empowerment of the ordinary Iranians right across the nation to go even further than what they have done already.
Indeed. Well, the speech that was made today, Mohsen Abbas, was pretty forthright. And Iran's leader actually not only talked about Iran's strengths, as our guests mentioned, but also about Iran's challenges when it comes to what it has to do. And one of the ones, obviously, has been this economic challenge, of which we will get into the pressure from the West, i.e. the U.S. in particular. But he said the key to solving the economic problems are domestic and national production, but with the participation of the people. Tell us what your take is on that, in particular the fact that he has somewhat underlined people's participation in its slogan overall.
Well, I think what the technical term for this is the growing strength of a resistance economy, because that's what the Islamic Republic of Iran has opted for. It's elected for that, but it's also been rather forced into that, because the kind of sanctions that Iran has been terrorized with over the years have just grown exponentially, and they're at a level which is almost inconceivable, especially for the nation in the condition it was from 79, the condition that Shah had left it in, and then of course all the constant psychological operations, the constant cultural revolutionary operations that the West has been engaged in, the military operations, an 8-year war imposed on the nation, and that has to be taken into account. All of this trillion-dollar effort to bring down Iran has failed. I mean, if you were just to look at the American investment in the media soft power exercise in trying to brainwash or indoctrinate Iranians living in Iran about how bad their government is, well, you'd be shocked, because there are hundreds and hundreds of these media agencies which are backed, and journalists, etc. And it's that soft power war, Kaveh, which actually Ayatollah Khamenei has hinted at, far more dangerous than any military threat that America now has against Iran, because that's been negated with the fantastic scientific and military development and the technological developments of the IRGC and all the other agencies that have been involved to get Iran up to speed in being able to defend itself. Well, we know that we can see in all the theaters that Iran has launched itself, it's been more than adequate in pushing back the Americans, in holding them down, and actually making them now think about leaving the region. It's the soft power which is far more dangerous. The cultural indoctrination, so the depletion of morale, trying to make the Iranian people think that they're failing. But you see, Ayatollah Khomeini said one thing. He said, no East, no West. That there is Islam at the heart of what you're going to do. And the Iranians really have to remember this fully and totally adopt it, because this is the third way. There is the socialist systems have failed. The neoliberal West is struggling with its hyper-capitalist systems here as well. The only real option that gives poor, ordinary people a chance at having a real genuine government and a genuine movement, which is for the oppressed and for the downtrodden, it is the Velayat-e Faqih system of Iran. I have great belief in that. The question is really, will the rest of the people who have erstwhile been supporters of this recognize the power and the necessity and the absolute strength of this system? That, I think, is what Ayatollah Khamenei has been referring to when he talks about hope and faith being two primary factors driving Iran's national interests and the future. They've got to have both.
Indeed. Well, when we talk about Iran, Master Shajar, in terms of the pressure that comes from the West, in particular the U.S., we're talking about the economic pressure, with the goal of many understand that to be regime change, really, trying to make people discontent. And I think Iran obviously not only realizes that, but this 13th administration, headed by Raisi, is completely aware of that. And we can see that in its presence in different trade pacts that it has signed with different blocs, like the SCO, like being a member of the BRICS organization now. Iran's leader acknowledged that that is a good thing. At the same time, he said that we need those MOUs that have been signed to turn into action, basically. And that therein is, that's pretty significant for him to say that pretty much in one breath. Tell us what you think about that and how important that plays, the acknowledgments by Iran's leader on that issue, and that it needs to translate into action.
Absolutely. I think, there are those who are saying that if there wasn't this Western opposition, these sanctions, these sort of Cold War and economical war against Iran, Iran would have been turned into a heaven. It would have flourished so much. I would say that, actually some of these sanctions have forced Iran to become more independent. And in some ways, when you look at, as I said, sort of beginning of the revolution, Iran couldn't even defend itself fully. Now it's being accused of being a power, not just in the region, but in Ukraine, and is helping Russia. So there are victories, there are empowerment, there are actually the fact that Iran is becoming a not just a regional power, but a world power. But I think in same time, we need to understand that we could have done much better. And indeed, the speech of Ayatollah Khamenei was focusing on that, that we are going the right direction, but we could do much better by the participation of masses. And I think this is really so true and so factual that the only way forward is more people getting involved and realizing that unless masses will get fully engaged, we are not going to see the result that we desire. And this encouragement and this empowerment of the ordinary people, reliance on the ordinary people as a way of addressing all these issues in much better way than we have done in past, I think it was the main aspect of the message today.
Taking a look at the way that he described two of the highlights of this past year, he talked about the epic participation of the people in Quds Day, said Mohsen Abbas. He also talked about the 22nd of Bahman rallies, a couple of the highlights, which involved obviously masses of Iranians that came out in the millions. You know, when you see that, obviously there's support for the Islamic establishment to the fullest degree. But yet the U.S. and some Western countries are pushing for the disillusionment of Iranians. While they should be the one that should be disillusioned now when they see so many people coming out, why do they keep pursuing a policy, anti-Iranian policy then?
Because they know they're going to fail with hard power. They know there is no way that they can bring down the Islamic Republic's leadership, its government, its political purpose and direction, its system, without using that deadly soft power and the propaganda. You see, they have the most sophisticated dark arts when it comes to brainwashing people, indoctrinating them, in culturally almost preparing them. And Hollywood is part of this. You know, you look at Hollywood, you look at all the kind of media outputs that they give. All of it is geared towards othering Muslims, or it's geared towards demonizing Iran, creating Iranophobia subtly or very overtly. So on the one hand, you've got the cultural attack that's going on the Iranians. But of course, the hard news itself, if you listen just to the output of the likes of the BBC and others, they are viciously against Iran in every way, shape and form, and they are grooming their people to be that way, yet still not fully worked. I mean, it's difficult at the best of times for getting Western people to really take foreign policy seriously. You can see that with the kind of lethargy amongst many still around Gaza. Even a genocide doesn't motivate some people to literally take on these kind of heinous, suppressive, tyrannical governments. They're not democratic governments, and it's not a democratic system we have here. We have an oligarchy. In the background, this oligarchy has a huge apparatus, a machinery. It's dominated by Zionists. It has a hate campaign for Iran. It fears Iran because Iran offers the only viable alternative, which exposes their lies and their fake democracy. So Iran, with its religious democracy, spiritual democracy, call it what you like, with that system that exists in Iran, it poses an existential threat to the Western fake neoliberal pseudo-democracies here. And it's already showing the people in West Asia that actually there is a way to succeed, because Iran has, it by its mere survival with the resistance economy and its advancements in economic self-sufficiency, with its advancements in building up its industries, it's showing the rest of the Arab world, the Western Asia, that you don't have to be a puppet and a slave of American dollars in order to succeed as a nation.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, the issue of double standards comes at play here. My question to you, Master Shadr, when we talk about the very sad issue of Palestine, I mean, it's really sad what is happening there. We all acknowledge that. Iran's leader on both occasions that he spoke today obviously referenced to the issue of Palestine and showed the double standards that the West plays, particularly the U.S. being complicit in this. When it comes to the issue of Palestine, he said that the U.S. and Israel are both stuck. They're in a quagmire now. Whether they pull out or whatever they do, they can't escape what has occurred. What's your impression of what he has said there?
Well, and I would go even further and say that, you know, it exposed the whole of institutions that have been set up under so-called liberal democracy. And to address the aspiration of the world community, everybody now sees it, that not just United States and Europe and the Western so-called allies are failing in illusions that they have created, that they're standing for democracy, human rights, and justice, and supporting apartheid genocide, but also the institutions like UN and international courts are failing to address try to do anything to stop this genocide taking place. You know, the action of the whole of the institutions have not even stopped the killing of one child up to today in the last few months. What has made a difference is the resistance which in Lebanon, in Yemen, and in Iraq and elsewhere, and resistance from Palestine itself, which everybody knows that the support of setting up such an axis of resistance, it goes back to a vision of Ayatollah Khamenei, and indeed the vision of knowing that nothing else is going to happen if communities will not stand up to stand against this genocide. Everyone around the world, be it they acknowledge or not, they are seeing that the only thing which is stopping or slowing down the genocidal act of Zionist state, which is being supported by U.S. and its allies, is the resistance. And who set up that resistance, who encouraged that resistance, who is sort of made sure plan for that resistance to be fit for purpose, is very clear. So that is very obvious now, and that the aspirations for justice, which is being sought by masses in Europe and elsewhere, ordinary people, cannot be addressed by these institutions, and is only being addressed by axes of resistance.
Yeah, these institutions have indeed failed when it comes to the issue of Palestine, but it's really telling, say, Mohsen Abbas, when you have the UN come out with this report, the so-called fact-finding mission, criticizing Iran for the handling of the riots that occurred on late 2022. And the Iranian foreign minister, a month ago almost, accusing the UN of double standards, criticizing it for basically setting up this fact-finding mission, but yet not taking any serious action when it comes to Israel's genocide and the killing of civilians in the Gaza Strip. That's a failure on the institution, isn't it?
Well, double standards, hypocrisy, lies, they're not just isolated within the political apparatus of the Anglo-Zionist Empire, nor are they just within the media. They exist also within these international institutions because they are an extension of that power. The funding that the UN gets from America, the funding that, for instance, the WHO gets from people like Bill Gates and the transnational corporations, which are also linked to these guys. You've got also the atomic agencies, which on the one hand will pressure Iran to to try to admit that it has nuclear weapons or capacity when it doesn't. Yet with Israel, you'll see they'll completely ignore anything that they know perfectly well they have in terms of nuclear weapons. Everybody knows it's an open secret of 400 plus nuclear weapons that Israel has at its disposal. The way they dealt with Ukraine and the way the whole of the so-called international community, which usually is a euphemism basically for all the American allies, they all turned around and wanted all sorts of boycotting of Russia, etc., and the shutting down of everything. They haven't done any of that with Israel. Not one little thing has been done to harm Israel's connections diplomatically, politically, culturally, or otherwise. Yet you can see the hypocrisy when they come to Iran or Russia. So expect nothing from these institutions. They were created after the Second World War to serve the interests of the global elitists. They still serve those global elites, and the Anglo-Zionist Empire's boots on the ground in terms of the Israeli occupation, or whether it's the US American military occupations of those regions, that's just their boots on the ground to carry out the orders. So Iran stands at the nexus of the resistance. They are not coordinating that resistance. The resistance does what it wants. Ayatollah Khamenei said it again today, that Hezbollah and the factions in Iraq and the factions that exist in Yemen who are putting up the resistance have their own independent strategies and policies, but Iran supports them, and it makes no bones about that. Israel, as a result of this very brave policy by the Islamic Republic of Iran, has been brought to its knees. The economy is stagnating. The number of people that have had to evacuate the northern occupied territories of Palestine is incredible. Hundreds of thousands have had to leave their settlements because the resistance has made it impossible for them to stay there. You've got, of course, in Gaza itself, you've seen the Israelis being forced to reveal who they really are. You know, the emperor has no clothes now. You can see what Israel and Zionism is, whereas the Hasbara prior to that, 70 years, they built up and nurtured this image of being the victims and the ones who were actually being attacked. Everybody knows that's a lie. The American reputation lies in tatters. Israel's reputation lies in tatters. Their economies are struggling. Unemployment is rising. They've got internal strife within Israel, where people like Benny Gantz and all the others are now fighting because they know they've not achieved any of their targets. Indeed. They've not been able to destroy Hamas. They've not been able to get rid of get back the hostages, and nor have they been able to ethnically cleanse the region in the way they wanted.
Well, Master Shajar, when our guest there talks about resistance groups in the region, the U.S. has been very quick to accuse Iran for the fact that its interests are being targeted within the region. But that really is a failure of the U.S. policy because of it's the way that it is. Its presence in the region is, in many cases, even illegal when it comes to a case like Syria. But Iran's leader has praised the resistance groups for what they have done, blaming and accusing the U.S. of using Iran as a scapegoat. Is the U.S. using Iran as a scapegoat?
Absolutely, but it goes far beyond that. I think we need to get rid of the illusion that the West has got some good intention. And indeed, some of the institutions like UN, OIC, and others, all of them put together, have got a good intention, but they're not able to do anything. The fact of the matter is they weren't meant to do anything. They have been set up to be the tools of colonialism and to implement colonial powers' interests. And so, really, right now, the only thing which is slowing down this genocide and has actually managed to stop it being total genocide and ethnic cleansing has been the resistance. And, you know, the resistance would not have been there if it wasn't because of the Islamic Revolution and is structured because of ideologically and supportive. I think it's very important. Many observers, including many Jewish observers, are saying very openly and publicly that they wish that at the time of the Holocaust of Nazis, there was some country like Yemen who will stand up and defend the right of the Jewish community and trying to stop that genocide. None of the Europeans did, in reality. The level of anti-Semitism was so rife all across Europe and in the West. So really what we need to understand is that what is Yemen is doing, what the others are doing, by doing their utmost to slow down and to stop this genocide taking place, is the only activity which is going honestly and sincerely to stop this and to slow it down. And for that, we need to sort of praise the whole community of resistance and those who had the hindsight to set it up and strengthen it so it could do the job that it's doing now.
Thank you very much. We're fresh out of time. Masoud Shajara, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from Brussels. Thank you so much. Sir Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator from London. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikko Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
An-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdha' al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaw.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. despite his young age, he showed